Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson. Imagine your mind getting stuck on a certain thought or image, and that image replays over and over and over again. The thoughts won't go away, and it causes high levels of anxiety, which leads to fear. That's how it can be for people who have obsessive-compulsive disorder. The homepage of the International Obsessive-Compulsive Disorder Foundation says this: "You may recognize that the fear doesn't make sense, yet it feels so very real." Today, psychologist Dr. Bruce Leese makes his monthly visit to talk about the cause and symptoms of OCD. We'll talk about how it's diagnosed and treated. That's ahead, but first, the news from NPR. How many of you have done the following? You hop in the car, start to pull out of the driveway to make the commute to work. You might be running a little late, but suddenly you're overcome with a thought. Did I close and lock the back door? So you run back into the house to check. Chances are you found the back door closed and locked. We all have these moments. But what if this behavior gets a bit more repetitive and frequent, to the point of affecting your life, to the point of making you late for work frequently, to the point of debilitation? Then it might be something more than playing it safe. It might be obsessive compulsive disorder, or it could be obsessive compulsive personality disorder. I'm Bill Anderson on Central Standard with Dr. Bruce Leese. He joins us to talk about obsessive behavior. Dr. Leese is professor of family medicine at the KU Medical Center. Welcome back to the studios.
Thank you so much. I always enjoy being here.
Okay. I mentioned two things. I mentioned obsessive compulsive disorder, and I mentioned obsessive compulsive personality disorder. Let's start with the first. Explain it.
Sure. First, let's talk about what obsessions and compulsions are, and that'll help us lead right into obsessive-compulsive problems.
Okay.
So an obsession, dealing mostly with thoughts, beliefs, cognitive processes, are recurrent and persistent nagging thoughts that just don't seem like they'll go away. They're usually not rational. They're not terribly objective. So obsessions are the thought processes that lead to compulsions. Compulsions are the behaviors, the repetitive, persistent behaviors driven by obsessive thoughts. Your example was perfect. You said you're pulling the car out of the driveway, and you ask yourself the question, did I close and lock the door? The thought, the obsessive thought that got you into trouble there, mm-hmm. was, no, I didn't lock the door. And as was discovered when the door was checked, the compulsion, as was discovered, the obsession that I left the door unlocked was an irrational one. It was an inaccurate one. So obsessive-compulsive disorder is the, as you said, debilitating disorder that keeps people from functioning effectively in life. It impairs people pretty significantly. In the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, obsessive-compulsive disorder is considered a bona fide psychiatric disorder. It can be treated with psychotherapy or medication, but usually it manifests itself as checking things or repeatedly doing things. It can even be a mental game where you're counting things. So it can be so bad that it can keep you from functioning in society. I worked with somebody once who had obsessive compulsive disorder, and it took him hours to put his pants on in the morning.
Really?
Because he couldn't do it right. He would put his pants on, and he'd think, I put the wrong leg in first, and he'd take the pants off, and he'd put them back on. And, the order was really important. It's really trivial and small things, and that is kind of the acute disorder that can get worse in an episodic fashion. People can have episodes of it.
Okay, Bruce, now obsessive-compulsive personality disorder.
We are all surrounded by, if not ourselves, have obsessive-compulsive tendencies. To some extent, they serve a function.
We all have those tendencies.
It's extreme self-discipline. Like anything else in the world, when pushed to extremes, it can really be problematic or pathological. But the obsessive compulsive personality is the personality, the person with the personality that's perfectionistic, overly conscientious. They may have trouble throwing things out. They certainly don't like delegating tasks. They can't trust other people to do things. 8 in 100, or just around 8% of people, so at least one person in every organization that has more than 10 people, every organization has people who are obsessive compulsive. Oftentimes it's the person that takes on the most responsibility. There are professions that really encourage that. Medicine, I would hope that my surgeon, if I ever needed surgery, would be obsessive compulsive and pay exquisite attention. But it doesn't get to the degree where you'd necessarily be impaired or go back and check things.
Yeah.
It can cause relationship problems, for example.
But you mentioned a person who had trouble getting dressed in the morning. That, I mean, that's one extreme. But on the other end is someone in the workplace. And I would argue that oftentimes I have some of those tendencies, and it works to my advantage in the workplace.
Absolutely. Anybody who is in a leadership position where they're responsible for other people, things that have to go well. I've always been impressed with how well people in, you know, this radio station, KCUR, attend to, you know, the seconds. The clock I'm looking at here doesn't say 10:10. It says 10:11:45.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got, in your profession, you've got to watch every second.
That's right.
Yeah, when the light goes off, you have to quit talking and stuff.
Well, and we kid. We've got 20 seconds, as if that, you know, is a lifetime. So what are some of the more common behaviors? Can you give us some specific examples?
Sure. Bruce? Let's start with obsessive compulsive disorder, the one that really can be impairing and the one that can keep – people can go on disability with obsessive compulsive disorder because they can't function at work. It could be washing. It could be washing until their hands are raw. There's never enough washing done that gets rid of all the germs. It could be, there are a couple of disorders like trichotillomania, hair pulling, or skin picking, or hoarding, or shopping. Mm-hmm. Just not getting enough of it to quell. That's the compulsion, is those behaviors to quell the obsessive thoughts. I've got to do this or something terrible will happen. So, like I said, you know, washing and counting and all that repetitive, really trivial stuff.
Now, I've seen estimates that indicate some 1 million Americans have OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. But I've also seen estimates that indicate as many as 3 million Americans have it. Where do you weigh in on that?
Well, again, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM-5 that just was published in April, just stuck with the number 1 to 1.5%. Actually,
okay.
I think they came up with 1.2%. So that usually when you see studies like that, they're looking at a wide range of studies. Some may have, you know, been done in the South, the North, the East, the West, Northeast. And so, you know, geography has something to do with it. In areas where, you get more people that are, say, in technology. Technology requires, and things like engineering require a high degree of compulsiveness, obsessiveness, in order for the work to be done. Silicon Valley, for example, would probably have more obsessive compulsive personality disorder people. Interestingly, it hadn't occurred to me, probably Steve Jobs had pretty significant obsessive compulsive personality mm-hmm. disorder, where everything had to be perfect or he was enraged. The closer you get to where things have to be perfect geographically, probably the more likely it is you'll find people who are obsessive compulsive.
And are we... It's an equal opportunity disorder, correct?
Yeah, I've known people who are wealthy who have it. I've known people who are poor who have it. Sometimes just having it results in the kind of economic declines that would cause somebody to lose everything.
Mm-hmm. So How does this manifest itself? How does this come about? Do I just wake up one day, open my eyes, and suddenly I'm having this thought, this repetitive thought that I can't get rid of?
There are some really, really good speculative work that's been done on the origins of this disorder and many others. It depends on kind of the school of thinking you come from. I will say that obsessive compulsive tendencies, also known as majoring in minors or sweating the small stuff or being a control freak, that stuff is those kinds of behaviors can be considered what's called compensatory strategies. They compensate for skills deficits so that people who engage in them are probably trying to make sense of life in ways that are ineffective or maladaptive because they don't have the skills they need to function effectively. For example, interpersonal relationships go well when people have emotional intelligence and empathy and warmth and can have high regard for others. If you were raised in a home where that wasn't of primary importance, you might learn the compensatory strategy of being a perfectionist, getting everything right. It can result from fear of not being loved if you don't do things exactly right. That's not at all uncommon.
Let's go back to Steve Jobs for just a moment. You know, you may argue that it's obsessive compulsive personality disorder, but when I look at the success he had over the years, I used to remark about his ambition, his work ethic, his ability to kind of synthesize and dissect complex issues. I mean, those are all good qualities, Bruce.
You're exactly right. that's the value of knowing that there's a difference between the psychiatric disorder of obsessive compulsive disorder, which can impair people to the extent that they can't work, can't be in relationships. So they used to call that axis one in the psychiatric field, axis one with the major psychiatric disorders. They don't use that terminology anymore, but it's still useful to think of them on different axes. The acute disorders, the major disorders, the ones that impair you, and then kind of the secondary ones that really just often makes life difficult for other people. So his success, it's not at all uncommon for very, very successful people to have the personality or the personality disorder of someone who's obsessive compulsive.
Our guest is Professor Dr. Bruce Leese. Dr. Leese is a professor of family medicine at KU Medical Center. You can join the conversation, 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Or send a tweet at KCURCST. We're talking about compulsive behaviors and disorders, what causes it, how it presents itself, and how it can be treated. And we welcome your phone calls. If you're dealing with this, we'll gladly welcome you as an anonymous contributor to the show, but 235-2888. Okay, help me understand this. I'm not necessarily born with this, but I might have something a predisposition to this disorder.
Right. I like to think of these kinds of disorders as resulting from a profound insecurity in one's self or one's ability to attach well.
Wow.
What do you think?
Yeah.
So when people are insecure, they've got to do something to make themselves feel more adequate or effective or capable. And if that's your tendency, it could result in terrific success in life. And if you go too far with it, it can result in crashing and burning. It's interesting. Obsessive compulsive personality sometimes looks like narcissistic personality, the last show we did here. A narcissist thinks that they're better than everybody, better than all other mortals. Well, obsessive compulsive people try to do things so well that they can't even be questioned. So some people might talk about Steve Jobs, the person we just talked about, as being obsessive compulsive. Some might see the narcissistic side, but some of those people are successful. And Jobs crashed and burned more than once in his career.
I laughed just a couple minutes ago because you were speaking to me. When I was young, preteen, I was incredibly insecure. And I developed some of these tendencies. And I'm going to tell you about one of them. I became obsessive with death and couldn't get away from the negative thoughts associated with death.
That's actually pretty developmentally normal.
Oh, it is.
I hate to tell you that you didn't have obsessive compulsive
disorder. No, that's fine. Thank you.
Sorry that you don't have that disease. But, you know, developmentally, we go from being very concrete, from being newborns and just wanting food and physical comfort. We go from that to being a little bit less concrete and more out there in the world, and then we become more abstract over time. Death is the quintessential abstraction, and I'm glad you brought it up because obsessive-compulsive people are very, very concrete. A lot of life's problems depend on our ability to abstract and understand the world and even what happens when we die. And you know, you were preoccupied with it because there was nobody who could explain to you exactly what it was and where you would be when you died. So, yes, we're all insecure at some level. We should be. We're just fallible, imperfect human beings. And we develop strategies to overcome that sense of insecurity. Some people turn into great, loving people, human beings, mensches, as they say in Yiddish. And some people just turn into workaholics and perfectionists, and they master the career world. So
hoarding of candy was also developmentally
normal. Developmentally normal. Yeah. Sorry, you're not afflicted.
Let's go to the phone lines. Jill is joining us from Prairie Village. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
Hi, Jill.
Hi. I just had a question. What part do genetics take in OCD? Because I would self-diagnose my father with OCD and my grandmother with OCD, and I probably have a little bit of it myself, but I'm hoping my children, I don't pass it along to my children is what I'm saying.
I can't be too precise, but hopefully the answer I give you will be helpful if you're not too obsessive, if you're not too obsessive compulsive and need details. You know, we're all predisposed to certain physical and medical challenges. You've given me an opportunity, Jill, to explain even more about obsessive-compulsive processes. Anxiety all revolves around autonomic arousal. Our autonomic nervous system is, you know, how tense we get, whether we sweat when we're nervous, whether we get nervous at all. Mm-hmm. And people are more or less disposed to certain degrees of autonomic arousal. There are actually people who you could, you know, no matter what happens around them, they're just mellow as can be. So genetically...
That's my husband.
Yeah. Okay. And it's really good to marry somebody who brings the other side into your life. So
I think we bring a good yin and yang, thanks.
Well, that's right. It's actually, my wife and I are the same way. But so we're all more or less predisposed. Some people are predisposed to heart disease. Some people are predisposed to depression and so forth and so on. So I would say that we're more or less predisposed to anxiety, to being worriers. And I think that the people who figure out, boy, if I'm perfect, I don't have to worry anymore, even though that's a bad thing to figure out because none of us is perfect, that may be the social learning part. So genetic might be the predisposition to autonomic arousal and anxiety, and learning how to cope with it maybe by being obsessive compulsive would be the learning process.
I want to build on Jill's question. As an overly protective parent, am I inclined to do some damage to my children who might be sort of going in this direction or have these tendencies to begin with?
Absolutely. To the extent that humans learn to take healthy, appropriate risks, to the extent that humans learn to take healthy, appropriate risks, we are more resilient to what the world throws at us. To the extent that parents protect their kids, overprotect their kids, and give them messages that the world is a dangerous place, you better be careful. To that extent, they're more likely to become more obsessive, compulsive, or anxious. So you need to have exactly the right length of distance from your kids, and controlling them too much will not teach them that they are resilient and they can survive in a challenging, difficult world.
Nice call, Jill. Thank you. And joining us from Independence is Katie.
Yes, good morning. I have a question. Earlier in the year, I had a major event in which someone I'm very close to was very ill, which led to other stuff. And since then, I've always been a worrier, but I find myself obsessing on small things, particularly when I'm trying to get to sleep, like someone's name who I worked with 10 years ago. And it's really concerning me to the point that I'm already in counseling. I'm just wondering what I can do, because I don't want to get to the point of true obsessive compulsive, and I really would prefer medication. If I don't take a sleeping tablet some nights, I don't sleep. And it's stupid, trivial little things.
Do you have a partner, a significant
Yes.
other? Okay. And do they sleep with you?
Yes.
And do they just kind of zonk out and fall asleep there next to you?
No, but it's more that I keep it to myself, because it's when I'm drifting off to sleep, my mind starts racing.
Right.
And then I can actually be asleep, and then it's the first thing I wake up and think about.
Well, here,
my significant other does not sleep well or go to sleep half as well as I do. But then I'm obsessing about the thought that I had before I fell asleep.
Right. One of the best ways to deal with any kind of obsessive thinking is to shift your mind over to the things that matter, to the things that matter in your life, that especially the ones that are good, especially the ones that are in process.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I have any kind of worry about falling asleep, I mean, my head will hit the pillow and normally I go right to sleep, but if my mind starts to flip over to, uh-oh, I didn't do this or I didn't do that, I immediately shift to, last night, what I thought about before I went to bed while my head was on the pillow. I thought about this morning, sitting here and getting to talk about a topic that's important to me. That's bigger than the little tiny worries I might have kept myself up with. So to the extent that you expand your thinking to things that matter way more, that are positive, or even the things that are difficult that you're dealing with well, that shift in thinking is where your mind ought to be anyway. And if you, especially people with a significant other, you say that you didn't talk to him about this, but you know, talking about stuff that matters helps our minds to get off of the stuff that doesn't matter. And that's a major, I think, effective approach.
What you're talking about, I think, is mindfulness and
yes.
just
yes, that's exactly
awareness.
Right.
But I would argue that most adults who struggle with this disorder have that awareness already, but those other thoughts just overwhelm them.
Actually, in the clinical work I've done, and also in clinical trials, teaching people mindfulness. These more obsessive, minutia-focused thoughts can be pretty well knocked away. No, it's actually not true that people who are obsessive-compulsive are also mindful.
Mm-hmm.
So learning how to pay attention to those things that matter.
What are some of the other remedies? Pharmaceuticals?
There are medications. I'm not a physician, but some of the newer and even older generation antidepressants are effective in knocking out the thought processes. They do so in a symptomatic fashion, and they can really be helpful to people who are too nervous to get psychotherapy. They're too worried. They think, well, this isn't working, this isn't working. They give more immediate relief, and they are effective.
Let's go back to the phones, and Tree is joining us from Kansas City, Missouri. You're on the air.
All right. I have a question about if the symptoms change regarding, I'm looking at an answer with, do I have OCD, which is great for you because you might be able to make an assessment of some sorts. But so I had bulimia when I was a teenager, which I recognized that, this is not normal. So I just checked myself into hospital. And anyway, I got that taken care of. Then later on, I mean, I had some serious issues with microbes and thinking about, you know, doorknobs and all the the thing that was fueling it was that I couldn't see, you know, the microbes, and I was, you know, acutely aware of the medical field because my parents were in the field, so I was at a young age aware of microbes and like the really, you know, scary ones. So I got over that too, though, because I just got a job working in a kitchen, and I realized myself, I'm not sick. I didn't get sick from being around all these germs, so okay, I'm over that. But for me, I feel like there's these things that just keep cropping up, and my current thing is it's hard to finish a resume because I think it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be what they want. So, you know, frequently I won't even, you know, finish the process. Finishing the process seems really, you know, I guess nerve-wracking. And so I'm wondering if I still have this, you know, issue, and I've noticed the symptoms and dealt with those throughout my life, but the core thing is still there. I don't know. I mean, I have no idea who I'm calling in.
No, it's so good that you did call because everything you said had good insight. Bulimia and the other eating disorders are often considered at least close cousins to obsessive compulsive disorder. It's an effort to control a certain behavior when in fact what you were probably striving for was to control feelings, which require far more than just controlling what you put in your mouth. If you were binging and purging, I'm assuming that was how you manifest your bulimia. Bulimia can be a lot of things, can be laxatives or purging by vomiting, but that attempt to control bigger things like feelings and what am I doing with my life and am I attractive enough, am I smart enough, those efforts by eating in a disordered way are a lot like what an obsessive compulsive person does. And if you get over that and you start thinking about your vulnerability then to microbes or bacteria or germs, that is another, I would say, manifestation of obsessive compulsiveness. At the core, I think for anybody who struggles with obsessive compulsive tendencies, there's a deep insecurity that just isn't resolved well. And the focus shifts from what's important in life, love and work and making a difference in the world. It shifts from there over to, you know, very, very, very tiny minutiae. Hopefully. Is your name Tree, you said?
Well, I let Tree go. I apologize. Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. Kristen writes us on Twitter, at KCURCST, I have a 13-year-old who's diagnosed with OCD and OCPD. So how does Kristen distinguish and support her son or daughter at home and in school, while kind of, you know, as it relates to the diagnosis, but at the same time kind of aiding his or her development as a normal living being?
That's very young to be diagnosed with a personality disorder, 13 years old. Without questioning the validity of the diagnosis, I would say that anyone who has a child that young that has gotten that severe a mental diagnosis really ought to get a second opinion. It that would be the first thing you'd do. And, a kid at 13 has a lot to deal with. Sometimes I think they have more to deal with than us adults do. So I would try to figure out what the child probably isn't dealing with that well, in addition to dealing with the OCD.
That's the voice of Dr. Bruce Leese. We want to introduce you next. Call us, 816-235-2888, 235-2888. A question or a comment, phone us. Our conversation is about obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, and we're also talking about the personality disorder associated with obsessive-compulsive behavior. As we've learned, it can be paralyzing, but everyone has a chance, and you can fight back. We're going to take a short break. I'm Bill Anderson. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. And welcome back. If you live with or live with someone who struggles with obsessive-compulsive disorder or the personality, we invite you to call 816-235-2888. I'm Bill Anderson. Dr. Bruce Leese is with us this morning. If you prefer to be anonymous, that's okay. Obsessive-compulsive disorder, part of everyone's vernacular as OCD. Bruce, I want to read you something. I heard this on Marketplace last week. Author Malcolm Gladwell was talking about his new book about underdogs, and he spoke of successful trial lawyer David Boies. And Boies, speaking of his profound dyslexic condition, told the author that he's successful because of his so-called disability, not in spite of the disability. So how might that apply to OCD behaviors?
Well, to the extent that we strive to and work at dealing with our true fallibilities and imperfections, and we can really rise above them. He says it's because of his disorder, and that's kind of a nice catchphrase, but yeah, it's because of his drive, his initiative, probably intellect.
Well, it forced him to rely on his memory because he couldn't write and he had a difficult time reading.
But every one of us has some limitation.
Yes.
And to the extent that we acknowledge that limitation and decide consciously, or some people do it unconsciously, that we are going to deal with it and go after what we believe we want. I mean, to the extent that we do that, we become successful, I believe.
Let's go back to the phones, and Gail is joining us. Hi, Gail, you're on the air. Well, apparently we lost Gail, but hopefully Gail will phone back in. Can you look at a person and spend, like, say, I don't know, half a day with this person and conclude that, yes, this person definitely has OCD or OCD
personality? Oh my goodness! It doesn't take that long, Bill.
Oh really?
I would have to have 6 hour sessions with people. Usually, let's talk about the personality disorder. That's I think we haven't given much time to that. A person with obsessive compulsive personality disorder tends to be very precise in a lot of ways. They tend to be kind of rigid, probably stubborn. I was in a meeting recently with somebody who was running the meeting, and I could see in minutes that they couldn't tolerate anything being out of order. If somebody had a thought and they didn't raise their hand, or if they weren't called on by the leader of that meeting, you could see their tension building. So it can take minutes to a trained eye, but just seeing somebody's need for control, I can often tell by a person's speech pattern if every consonant is spoken very, very, very precisely and all of that stuff. It can just take minutes to assess, not clinically, but kind of off the top of one's head. You know, they look kind of obsessive compulsive.
Back to the phones we go. Donald, you've got a success story to share.
Yes, I do. Yes, my name is Donald, and I have come through a life of dealing with this issue of obsessive compulsive behavior, addictive behavior, and...
Donald, are you on a cordless phone?
Pardon me?
Are you on a cordless phone? It sounds like you're getting some interference.
No, there is some slight interference, but I'll just make this as quick as I can.
Okay, good. Thank you, Donald.
I have learned that it's possible to bring this issue into the realm of being a positive, contributive part of my life. For years, it was just deprivating and sucked the energy out of me. And I've been able to refocus my life through years, and I'm talking about 20 years it's taken me to bring this into a positive attribution.
Well, quickly, Donald, tell us what you did to have that level of success.
Well, first I got therapy, and I think Bruce may know who I am, but it has been incredibly helpful, life-sustaining. I mean, without therapy, I don't think I could have conquered it.
Hmm.
And my life today is so much more peaceful and joyful, and a sense of being able to be in control of my life. I just want to say thank you, Bruce.
Wow. Well, it's interesting.
I apologize for the quality of the phone line, but I thought Donald's call was important.
Oh, it's a great call. In fact, it reminds me that for the last week I was involved in the pledge drive as a pitcher, and when somebody called in, if I knew them, I could like cheer and say thank you for becoming a member of KCUR. If in fact Donald were a patient of mine, I wouldn't be allowed to say you're welcome. But it was a wonderful call. I'm delighted when people find relief from that kind of pain. Donald made a point that if he hadn't called, I wouldn't have thought of it. A lot of people deal with anxiety disorders and obsessive compulsiveness with alcohol. It's not at all uncommon because alcohol gives people relief from that perfectionism, that over-conscientiousness, and it can really make matters worse. It becomes a vicious cycle of unrelenting standards, which is the key to the cognitive part of obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. They deal with unrelenting standards of their own towards themselves by drinking, and when they drink excessively, they end up failing, which makes them even more anxious and obsessive-compulsive. So that combination of an anxiety disorder and the use of a substance to deal with it can be deadly. It can really be problematic.
How damaging can obsessive compulsive personality disorder become? Life threatening?
If the person, it can be life threatening. I'll give you the dynamics of potentially life threatening obsessive compulsive personality. If a person has unrelenting standards, they're perfectionistic, nothing is ever quite good enough, everything has to be right. At the same time, these people don't tend to get close in relationships because relationships are muddy and kind of abstract. So if a person has all of this drive and it somehow leads them to make big mistakes and they fail, for a lot of people that's devastating. Mm-hmm. I think suicides that occur like when the market is, you know, falls precipitously, or people who commit suicide when they lose their jobs, they certainly had unrelenting standards. A person, again, that is at the core cognitively of obsessive compulsive personality disorder. So with that level of standards that nothing's ever good enough, life doesn't look very pretty. And mm-hmm. to some people, death is far more attractive, unfortunately.
Yet OCD remains at the root of a lot of humor. I don't know if you heard a Prairie Home Companion yesterday, but Guy Noir was talking to a person who was struggling with obsessive behavior as it related to her email.
Oh, I didn't hear
Facebook.
That. I didn't hear that. That's great.
But that does lead to a question about social media. Does that contribute in the year 2013 does it kind of play in and feed people to their detriment?
You know, I'm not sure if it feeds social media. I will tell you that people do a lot of things to distract themselves from that which is most important in life. The two most important functions facing a human being is making sense of life, finding meaning and figuring out why we're on earth. That's mm-hmm. one. And the other is finding love, figuring out how to love well. And neither social media nor other obsessive compulsive behaviors, if it becomes obsessive compulsive, those things don't evolve into love or finding deep meaning in life. So I don't know if that answered your question, but it gave me a chance to think about that.
Deanie is joining us from Gladstone and has a question about somebody she cares about.
Yeah.
How do you pronounce your name?
I'm sorry?
How do you pronounce your name?
My name's Deanie. You pronounced it right.
All right. Thank you.
You know, my boyfriend told me he had obsessive compulsive disorder, and until I listened to the show, I thought he was just kidding. but I'm pretty sure he's right. And so my question is, if you are in a relationship with somebody like that, how do you work with the obsessive compulsive disorder as opposed to against it? How do you support the person?
Yeah.
Very good question. As I said earlier, these kinds of problems often evolve when people feel particularly insecure and don't really have mechanisms for seeking meaning in their lives. They don't let themselves be vulnerable very easily. It's difficult for them to let their guard down because, you know, they can't control what happens after that. And to the extent that a person like your boyfriend, if that's the way he is, to the extent that they are able to be less guarded, more open to experience in life, less fearful about talking about those vulnerable things like feelings, he can evolve into a more fully functioning human being. The nice thing about therapy for obsessive compulsive people is that most therapists, regardless of their orientation, teach people a language that revolves around feelings and emotions. And so that's something that a lot of people with obsessive compulsive disorders don't have. They don't have that kind of language to talk about what they feel. I would say to anyone getting into a relationship with anyone that if you spot problems that concern you, I would say that you can only assume that those will get magnified or worse over time, because all of us who have been in love know that we're on best behavior and we're working really hard to be our best selves in new relationships. And what happens?
It's been a year, and it took that long just to get him to be my boyfriend.
Yeah,
and it had a lot to do with just not going away when he freaked out on me.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just like he had like an abandonment complex or something like that.
Well, that's part of that insecurity. But again, I encourage people not to do rehab dating, where they find somebody in the world that they...
I'm not trying to fix him or anything. I'm trying to say, how can I work with him? How can he make it work for him and not against him?
Like I said, to the extent that people figure out strategies for making sense of the world they can't control, they will be far healthier people with or without obsessive compulsive tendencies.
Deanie, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And your boyfriend. You know, Deanie's boyfriend, I have to give him a lot of credit. It seems like he was forthright with her about his condition. And is that common? Do people with obsessive compulsive behaviors, or even to the level of disorders, do they hide this from other people, or do
they tend? It depends on the disorder.
Okay.
Somebody who has a disorder that involves inhibiting feelings and involves concrete thinking and kind of the absence of self-reflection. Somebody with those kinds of disorders and obsessive compulsive disorder would be one. Schizoid personality disorder would be one. Schizophrenia would be one. People with disorders who, where the disorder is very concrete, etc., they don't usually have insight to begin with, so they don't come forward with concerns. So that is it's very cool when somebody is able to see that they have obsessive compulsive tendencies. Whereas people who are depressed, they're very much in touch with their pain, and they usually can talk about it pretty easily. More women than men.
This is Central Standard. Oh, surprise there. This is Central Standard on 89.3 FM. We're talking about obsessive compulsive disorder, obsessive compulsive personality disorder as well. It doesn't matter what race, what ethnicity, what gender you are. It can be debilitating to people from every persuasion and background. We can probably take a few more calls. 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Calling from Overland Park is Lou. Hi, Lou.
Hi. I've been diagnosed clinically with circular thinking, and, you know, it's part of it, and I think they're right, because I know I can tell I do that, and sometimes it just gets like to the point where I can't quite get off the thought process. And I wondered if you had any suggestions, and I find that when I go to counseling, it does help. And I'm going to be going to counseling again through my work, but I don't have a choice on who to choose. And so I have to call today to go to counseling again.
Lou, that's, I think you've answered the question. You've answered the question well. I think that the best way to deal with any kind of obsessive compulsive process is to get counseling, because the therapist, I expect, will pull your thoughts in a direction that will be helpful to you. One of the words I haven't gotten to use yet today is rigid, a major feature of obsessive compulsive disorder and personality disorder is a certain amount of rigidity. And hopefully what happens in good relationships, like the one we heard about earlier, or in therapy, what happens is that the rigidity starts to subside and people start to think flexibly.
Mm. Kent's joining us from Richmond, Missouri.
Hi. I've enjoyed the show. I'm a professional speaker and comedian, and been doing this a long time. And probably 15 years ago, my wife, we saw the movie As Good As It Gets, and my wife said, look how funny Melvin Udall's compulsions are. And she said, start making fun of them. And so I started making fun of my own compulsions. I have more of the personality situation, in cleaning my hands, the trichotillomania. And when I started making fun of them, not only are they really funny, they don't have the same hold over me.
Exactly. And you just illustrated the last point I made, which is it's the rigidity that makes it so hard to shake these things. And what you've done by laughing at them is to be more flexible in your thinking. You're looking at them from another angle. So good job.
One of my favorite lines is, I bring my own water, I bring my own mic stand, I bring my own cough drops, my own disinfectant wipes whenever I work. And I often tell the audience, nobody ever talks about the positive aspects of OCD. You know, it really has helped me to laugh at it.
But it's that cognitive flexibility that you exercised that was a major part of your solution. So good for you.
Quick question for you, Kent. How does your audience react to that kind of humor?
Well, they love it. I think that I told the screener, I was really good at hiding the hand washing and the other things that I do. And I think what I do is I clean my hands on stage whenever I feel like it. And so they've already seen it out of me. I then bring it up, they really love it because they're all sitting there wondering about it, because it's usually, you know, 45 minutes into a show before I start talking about it.
A number of famous comedians have problems with anxiety, and they, I think, is it Howie Mandel that won't?
Howie Mandel, yes.
Yeah, who won't touch anybody. So you got to be pretty disciplined to be a comedian. There's a lot of there's a lot of stress in it, and you got to be somewhat perfectionistic to do what your audience needs from you. So best of luck to you.
And Jane is joining us from somewhere out there. Hi, Jane.
So that is not obsessive.
Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I'm sitting here folding clothes as I'm listening to you, and I just wanted to comment that, you know, I'm sitting here folding clothes, and I'm noticing how everything has to be perfectly folded, and you know, and I have to have everything perfectly aligned, and at the same time, I have this feeling that I'm not really obsessive compulsive. I'm just I'm anxious, I'm putting off doing something I don't want to do by folding clothes and listening to you. Then there's the other piece that I really wanted to address, which is the nomenclature of personality disorder versus just calling obsessive-compulsive neurological condition, and some of the other things that are called personality disorders, it just seems kind of judgmental. And I'll get off the air because I know we're real short on time.
Okay. You know, I can identify. I haven't met a laundry basket that I'm not madly in love with yet.
You said you like to do laundry during the break.
For the same reasons that I think Jane does.
Well, there's a sense of success. I was folding my own T-shirts last night, and I unfolded one that wasn't folded properly. There's nothing wrong with feeling a sense of accomplishment for doing something right. And the more minor it is, the more easy it is to do it perfectly, which is why people develop obsessive-compulsive disorder. Because the smaller the thing, hand-washing, the easier it is to do it absolutely perfectly. But you can't lose sight of what matters in life.
Well, we just kind of scratched the surface here. If people want more information, where would you direct them?
Oh, you talked about that website. There are some really good websites. I strongly recommend that everyone use the web, but only look at medical schools and legitimate associations that represent professions and entire areas.
And self-diagnosis is probably not a good thing.
No, self-diagnosis is just a start.
Yeah. I want to thank our guest, Dr. Bruce Lees, professor of family medicine at KU Medical Center. We'll see you next month.
I look forward to it.
You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore the growing popularity of e-cigarettes. Up to Date is next with an examination of the life and presidency of Woodrow Wilson. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. I'm Bill Anderson. This is KCUR.